Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Today I'm pleased to have with us Michael Tellinger, who is the author of several books. The one that is fascinating, I'm finishing it now, is Slave Species of God, The Story of Humankind from the Cradle of Humankind. And two other books, Temples of the African Gods and Adam's Calendar, are also out now. Michael is a South African. This is why we had a little bit of trouble this morning getting him on the line. Just he's online via Skype, and it took a little bit of time to get the connection established. Welcome, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Susan. Lovely to be with you. Can you hear me?
I can. You're coming through loud and clear. Given that we don't have any major solar flares, I think we'll be okay.
Right.
Well, Michael, you've amassed a very interesting work in Slave Species of the Gods, or of God. And would you like to tell our listening audience how you became interested in discovering the true origins of civilization and the story of Adam and how Adam and Eve were created?
I think my journey probably followed the same journey as many other people that are involved in this quest. Just, you know, reading other authors, starting with Eric von Däniken, whose work really sparked so many millions of minds around the world, and started asking more questions and not being satisfied with what history books tell us and what we get taught at school and eventually taught at university. Realizing that there's a whole another area of untold information that you have to go and find out for yourself. And the moment you start researching this body of information that is outside the mainstream education, bastions of education, you realize that there's a very exciting body of evidence that points to a completely different story of human origins and who we are, where we come from, and why we're here. And that really is what sucked me into this, and it's been going on for a long time now.
Well, I likewise came across books called, like, Chariots of the Gods, and when I read it, something inside me said that this contains truth. And then Stitchin's books, and I recently interviewed the author of Adam, The Missing Link. Are you familiar with that one?
I'm actually not. That sounds fascinating. Who is that?
Let's see. I can't remember the author, but I'll email it to you. It's all of the physical evidence collected, I believe, by a scientist. I think he's an engineer and also a anthropologist who put together all of the physical evidence, including the what you refer to, the cuneiform tablets, those things that roll when you roll them. They're made of hematite. When you roll them, you get a story.
The cylinder seals. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, cylinder seals, and then he uses the statues, you know, all of the stone statues that have so much information in them. And the book is called Adam, The Missing Link, and just basically brings a whole bunch of physical evidence into the story to support what is in the cuneiform tablets. So I guess for people who might have missed that one, we ought to back up and just kind of tell the story of what we know from the evidence and what you've done to kind of add to that body of evidence.
Well, I think the reason why I wrote Slave Species of God, which is now nearly 6 years ago, was that I felt that there wasn't a book that pulled together in a simple storyline the translations from the Sumerian tablets, the works of Zachariah Sitchin, which many people find quite difficult to read. For me, it's absolutely awesome stuff. It's quite scientific and academic, I suppose, in many ways, the way he puts it out. but a lot of people struggle with that. So I was compelled to take scientific information about the, you know, the human anatomy, the genetics, and then the origins of the various religious groups on planet Earth, and pull it together with what we find in the Sumerian tablets, and put it out and easy to read and easy to understand the general public on the street, so that it's not as difficult and complicated to understand like a lot of the sort of more scientific books. And I seem to have managed to do that from the many emails I get from people. And then that obviously went from setting that scene as to proposing an alternative theory of who we are, where we come from, and why we're here as the human race, linking it to the Sumerian tablets and the many often misunderstood phrases in the Bible and other ancient religious texts from various religions around the world that all seem to be talking about the same set and the same group of events, and reaching a conclusion that there is a you know, an ancient civilization that was active here in southern Africa, mining gold, which eventually led to all the other civilizations that we find around the planet. And that then led me to meet a guy called Johan Heine, who introduced me to the stone ruins of southern Africa, and that's nearly 4 years ago now. And that sort of catapulted me into a whole different area of research that I immediately felt was directly linked to Slave Species of God and the Sumerian tablets, and what then became very obviously the physical evidence that everyone's been looking for but were overlooking, the physical evidence that points to the very ancient and early civilization of advanced humans in southern Africa mining gold, to which the Sumerian tablets keep referring.
Well, let's talk a little bit about why the ancient gods came to Earth to mine gold, so we can just kind of go from there, and just briefly, and then we'll concentrate on what you've actually found in South Africa, because it's fascinating, along with some of the scientific information about using the Earth's harmonics for power, which I think is some of the most exciting work that you've come across.
Yeah, you know, the whole golden thing is really interesting, because it's not possible, or let's rephrase it, it is impossible to separate human history and human existence and human origins from man's or mankind's obsession with gold. It's just not possible. Every ancient culture is directly and inextricably linked to gold, the mining of gold, and the obsession with gold. And it doesn't just end with the humans. It extends to the gods, the mythological, so-called mythological beings that were actively involved with all these ancient civilizations. And gold plays a central theme in all of human evolution and the creation and human activities for thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. Now, why is it gold? Obviously, there needs to be a reason. Now, that reason is not necessarily always very obvious and very easy to understand, because it does take on some very interesting directions as to what gold is, what it represents to humanity as it is today, and what it may have represented in the past. Because you know, gold is available, or is manifested in two different forms, and the one is the physical form, the shiny metal with the atomic number of 79. And it seems to be directly linked to planet Earth. The 79 is also the number of planet Earth at its polar diameter, 7,900 miles, very close to that. And in the work that I've been doing with the brilliant Willem de Swart and the book we've been working on, Secret Numbers of God, all these things are revealed in the what we call the numeric grid that we seem to be trapped in here on Earth and in the universe. And these are little things that suddenly start to play a very important role, why gold is so important. So that gold seems to be a very rare and scarce material in certainly our solar system and it seems to be scarce in our galaxy as well. And there was a very specific reason why these advanced beings came to Earth in search of gold, because it has so many amazing properties, and we're only starting to understand those properties now. And those properties I'm talking about, other than just the shiny metal, which we hang around our necks and, you know, adorn ourselves with bling and think that we're really smart and wonderful. Well, it's gold is a lot more than that. It truly is a remarkable substance, and people that are involved in alchemy and understand the transmutation and the transformation of one material into another, it becomes a very interesting story that is directly linked to human evolution and human history. And the more you study quantum physics and the understanding of how one mineral and one metal is basically very, very close to another, it's just the spatial arrangements of the electrons that make up all things in the universe, you realize how all this stuff could be manipulated and was manipulated by beings with advanced knowledge to transform things and materials and minerals from one form to another. So to come back to really your original question, why the gold? That's a multi-leveled, a multi-layered answer, I suppose, but it starts with a physical material and then eventually becomes a non-physical material, the orms, the orbitally rearranged monoatomic elements, and the so-called white powder of gold or manna from heaven. And we start linking all the ancient cultures and civilizations and the biblical stories and also the Asian civilizations and their obsession with gold all starts to pull together, and gold plays the central theme in all of this. It's quite spectacular.
So in Slave Species, you were saying that the Earth, there's evidence anyway, that the Earth is rich in gold relatively to other planets, because it is actually a portion of another planet that got knocked, I guess, because of a collision with another planet called Nauvoo. Is that right? Ended up forming the asteroid belt, and which is mostly water and Earth. And what's interesting to me is that in the Quran, it says that the asteroid belt is primarily water. And how did they know that when the Quran was written? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, and also for people that aren't familiar with this, the asteroid belt is long ago, it has already been agreed, and it's general consensus by astronomers and astrophysicists that there is a missing planet where the asteroid belt used to be. Some people still find that, you know, an interesting little phenomenon, a curiosity. Well, it is not a curiosity. It is absolutely shown in many papers and books by astrophysicists and so forth that there is a missing planet where the asteroid belt used to be, and they're just pieces of a planet. The other important thing to throw out there, and this is something that very few people often bring up as an argument about the origins of our planet, planet Earth, is this whole thing about continental drift. You know, and that all the landmass was condensed together at one stage and slowly but surely started moving apart. Well, you know, that's a wonderful notion and an interesting observation. But at the same time, it scientifically and geophysically, it suggests that the planet could not have been formed from a primordial seed, that it is a consequence of some cosmic collision. Because even today, when you go into Google Earth, and you swing it around to look at the Pacific Ocean, there's a place that you can put the Pacific Ocean in the middle of your screen, and you hardly see any land. You just see little pieces of land that cover the rest of the image, which tells us that half of the planet is pretty much water, and the other half is where all the land mass is concentrated. Now, that is clearly not the model that is the consequence of centrifugal forces that have been going around for 3.5 or 4.2 billion years. Remember that we don't know how old the Earth is. They keep throwing out these numbers, and they suggest that the Earth is about 4.2 billion years old, and that keeps changing all the time. But if the Earth was formed out of a cluster of condensed celestial dust, out of the explosion of the sun, the forming of our sun that formed all the other planets, then it would make absolutely no sense that all the landmass on our Earth
was on the one side of the planet and the other side was filled with water. That's absolutely nonsensical. From the beginning, the landmass should have been distributed equally around the entire planet, supported by the water in which it sits, and not stuck all onto one side and slowly but surely moving apart, like it seems to be doing. So what you suggested, Susan, is the fact that our planet is a consequence of a celestial collision, which is something that Zachariah Sitchin talks about extensively in his works, and the Sumerian tablets seem to suggest, that seems to be supported very basically and fundamentally by the layout of the landmass and the water on our planet.
So that explains why the Earth has so much water, in contradistinction from other planets that are orbiting the sun, and also why it has gold. And the planet, let's talk a little bit about Planet X in terms of the elliptical orbit it takes, that it may have been what collided with this planet that then formed the asteroid belt and Earth, and the relationship of why that planet needed gold. What was the theory behind that?
Well, according to Sitchin and the Sumerian translations that he has, the conclusions he has reached is, and I guess there are many others that have reached the same conclusions, is that this planet that the Sumerian tablets refer to as Tiamat, Nibiru, that came into our solar system. Now, there's still huge argument and contention as to what Nibiru really is. Is Nibiru a planet around another little solar system, like a red dwarf or something like that, that seems to be approaching us again? Or is it a planet on its own, that it's on a 3,600-year orbit? There seems to be a lot of information out there that has been suppressed, and there's also a lot of disinformation that's coming, making its circles and around. And according to the Sumerian tablets, Nibiru and the Anunnaki, who come from Nibiru, needed gold, and they chose gold to be the perfect metal or material that could save their planet from, cosmic rays and the X-rays and the various cosmic rays that they found, because they found that their planet was experiencing huge climatic change and was exposed to the deadly cosmic rays, and they needed to create like a synthetic shield around their planet, like a synthetic ozone layer or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they chose gold to be that material.
So really, gold was very, very a very important tool. It wasn't used for adornment by them. It was used to save their planet, which I think is important to understand.
Yeah, and that's a very important recognition. All ancient cultures will tell you that the gold that they were mining belonged to the gods.
Right.
They were mining it for the gods. Right.
Not for them.
And especially in the Americas. So, and they weren't allowed to own it. It was not theirs. It always belonged to the gods. And therefore, when the time came and they could snatch a piece of gold and keep it for themselves and so forth, it became very, very valuable because it's something they weren't supposed to have. And then there was probably a time that came that the miners and the humans were allowed to keep small pieces of gold as artifacts or mementos of what it is they were doing. And that became extremely valuable to the humans and the early humans. So they started to adorn themselves with it because it's something that was from the gods. Mm-hmm. And that's, I believe, where the whole thing of jewelry and the adornment of gold has its origins, because it's something that was not meant to be possessed by humans.
That's fascinating. So, let's spend a minute on Adam and how we know when Adam and Eve came to being. There's one thing I met you at the Truth Convention, but I didn't tell you this. My cousin is Doug Wallace, who discovered the importance of mitochondrial DNA and was the main geneticist who discovered when Eve was how you could trace Eve back through the mitochondrial DNA. So
that's fantastic.
Isn't that fascinating?
You got a great family there.
Yeah, we have a family of scientists. But anyway, yeah, so I followed that work for a long time, obviously, because he's my cousin.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole thing of Adam and Eve is a very interesting story, because there's some, you know, when you start reading the Bible from looking for scientific and clues, and the Quran and other ancient texts, and you're not reading it from an emotional perspective like many people do, when you start reading it and you're looking for clues in between the lines, you find so many fantastic things and little one-word phrases, one-sentence phrases that you suddenly go, my goodness, I've never seen this before. For example, just the other day I noticed, it says in the Bible, and then it is in Genesis 6:20, verse 24, when they talk about the Nephilim and the sons of the gods came to earth and saw the daughters of man and so forth, right? But right. It says when men began to multiply on earth, when men, not when humans began to multiply. And mm-hmm. This is a very important statement. And it's important to digest this and realize that the first humans that were created to mine the gold by the Anunnaki here in southern Africa, and we'll talk about the overwhelming evidence for that. The first few thousand years, they were only cloning men. Only right. Male species being cloned. Women did not feature at all. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly they realized that they can't keep cloning these humans. They needed more of them, and they couldn't clone them fast enough. Mm-hmm. So they realized that they needed to create a female for this male species so they could procreate on their own.
Right.
And that's when Adam and Eve, the whole Eve gets taken from Adam's rib. And you know the story in the Sumerian tablets? It's a very detailed story that Zechariah Sitchin describes, how they put Adamu into a deep sleep and they took the essence from his rib. My guess is that they took a bit of bone marrow
because
you got... That's the closest bit to the surface of your skin,
mm-hmm.
and they put him into a deep sleep, and out of that they then fashioned the female, and up to that point, humankind only had 22 chromosomes, mm-hmm. 22 pairs of chromosomes, and then suddenly they created the sex chromosome and added the 23rd chromosome, the X and the Y chromosome, the Y for the men and the X for the female chromosome, and that's when they started to and created the female species and put them into the Garden of Eden, which is really like an observation tank and an experimental garden to see if the two would get on. You know,
right.
In many species, the female will mate to the male and then she'll eat the male or kill him.
Right.
And they didn't know if this was going to be the case. So they had to observe if the two would get on, if they would, you know, procreate and bring forth offspring, and if the female would actually not, you know, behave badly and take control. and who knows? They may have actually had to perform more tweaks and twists to the DNA before they allowed them to get out of the Garden of Eden and go on their merry way and start shagging each other to death and procreating millions of little babies, you know?
Right. Well, that's a fascinating addition to most people's understanding of the Garden of Eden.
Well, exactly. It is an experimental observatory, you know, a lab that they were observing these mm-hmm. two new creatures. And what's also very important, Susan, is this number 22, and this is just playing a bigger and bigger role in my research. And this number 22 just keeps popping up everywhere, and like our 22 pairs of chromosomes. Suddenly I'm finding, and then suddenly they add the 23rd one, and that just causes the confusion. And yet, when you start looking at the secret numbers of God, as I said, that I'm working on, the 22/23 ratio is a very important archetype for the goddess principle and the creation principle and so forth. But important to know that 22 is such an important number because it is, you know, first of all, 22 chromosomes originally, the number they're 22 tarot cards in the major arcana. In the Kabbalah tree of life, there are 10 nodes and they're joined by 22 links. 22/7
is pi, and that is the ratio that connects all harmonic resonant frequencies throughout the entire universe through that 22 ratio, 22 over 7, which doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter whether the circle or the sphere is a teeny-weeny little bubble or if it's the size of the entire universe, they are connected by that ratio. There are 22, there seem to be, this is the latest genetic information that I've got from leading geneticists, that they now believe that there are 22 chakras in our DNA that are activated by light as it travels up our DNA. Mm-hmm. So this number 22 is really, really important. And David Wilcock talks about the Montauk Project and the reverse engineering of the crashed UFOs that was done at the Montauk Project. Obviously, the people that are aware of that will be familiar with this. And they found the seat from the crashed UFO that they were reverse engineering. They found 22 primary frequencies out of which all other frequencies emerged. And it's quite fascinating, this number 22. Yeah,
well, it's one of the, in numerology, 11, 22, and 33 are prominent numbers for master numbers and also associated with the gods. So basically, the story is that probably some of the DNA of the Anunnaki was added to the human DNA, with the human not necessarily being Homo sapiens, but maybe an earlier or an earlier version of that. And it was really genetic engineering that produced, you know, some, you know, dead ends, and then produced some successes in what the Anunnaki were trying to create.
Yeah, that seems to be, that definitely seems to be the case. And once again, all for the single purpose of mining gold. I also believe that the original people that were created through the genetic cloning were not, didn't look very much like we do. They probably had very distinctly different features to us. I believe they were probably a reddish, dark reddish color. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting translation piece in the Sumerian tablets that that says when they created the Adamu, they said, look, he's got red skin. He's smooth skin like the Anunnaki skin. And it's the color, the hue of the African, of the clay of the Abzu. Sorry, the clay, the color of dark red it is like the clay of the Abzu. And, you know, we certainly have very dark reddish soil here, very fertile soil. And what's interesting is that the oldest people on Earth, genetically the oldest people on Earth, are the Bushmen or the Khoisan people of southern Africa. And just last week or 2 weeks ago, a new scientific paper was released that now finally actually puts it absolutely without a shadow of doubt that they've traced the oldest DNA to southern Africa, to the Bushmen. Mm-hmm. And guess what? The Bushmen call themselves the Red People.
Right. So and, they may actually be the descendants of the original Adam.
Yeah, I think they are. They probably are very most likely the descendants. However, the Bushmen that live in southern Africa today, the so-called Khoisan people, and there's a lot of confusion about the name of these people, because they say that they're two different types of groups, the Khoikhoi and the San. I've also got from other reliable sources that was just a misunderstanding in the nomenclature a long time ago, that the spelling of it was confused, like the Khoi people were actually the San Khoa people, and the pronunciation of the Khoa got pronounced as Khoi, and then suddenly it became the Khoikhoi people, but actually originally it's the same group of people. So it's very confusing, but nevertheless, the San Khoa people, the Bushmen or the Khoisan people, lived in a place called, they come from a land called Namakwa, Namakwa land in southern Africa. And you start to realize that Nama is actually some sort of bread or meat and food that's provided by the gods to the Kwa people, and when you just turn it around, Nama and Mana starts to suddenly mean exactly the same thing. You know, bread from heaven, food of the gods, the white powder of gold, and you realize that the San Kwa and the Namakwa people actually come from the land of Namakwa land, where manna was mined thousands and thousands of years ago. Manna is the white powder of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got some very interesting links, even through language that's gone slightly bastardized, but you can certainly see some very interesting links.
Hmm. Well, let's fast forward to your discoveries of the, I guess, millions of stone circles in South Africa and what you've discovered there and what that may mean in terms of hidden technology or unknown technology with earth resonance to produce energy.
Yeah. Well, that's obviously very, very important and crucial to all the stuff that we're talking about. The fascination with the stone circles and the stone circular ruins in southern Africa actually goes back 500 years to the early Portuguese navigators and explorers that came around the Cape of Good Hope and entered the African continent through the coast of Mozambique and started to move inland and started coming across many of these stone circles and these ancient ruins that were completely ruined and covered by trees and overgrown. This includes Great Zimbabwe, by the way, the spectacular ruins in Great Zimbabwe at Masvingo. And Great Zimbabwe, incidentally, means house of stone. Zimbabwe means house of stone. That's where the Great Zimbabwe comes from. And when they started asking the local native tribes that lived nearby, who built these? Did you build these? The answer was no, we didn't build these, and our ancestors didn't build these. We don't know who built these. Often they were told it must be the work of the devil because a man cannot build stuff like this. So there's some very interesting records that go back to 1510 and even before the turn of the century in the late 1800s that I'm trying to desperately find, that I've had some references to by people. And they clearly tell us about these circles. And then in the 1800s, they were explored to a great extent by a guy called Theodore Bent, who was a wonderful British archaeologist who spent 2 years in southern Africa exploring these ruins and doing some of the earliest excavation at Great Zimbabwe, giving us a lot of fascinating information about the fact that it's linked to an ancient gold mining civilization. And obviously, everybody just thought he was crazy in 1891. And then by that stage, he estimated there were about 4,000 of these ruins. Well, that was from horseback. So you can imagine 4,000 stone circles from horseback. That was his estimate. Then by late 60s and early 70s, a guy called Roger Summers did a lot of work and wrote three or four books on the ruins of southern Africa. And he did a beautiful calculation and showed that there were at least 20,000 of these stone circles. But all these guys just unfortunately didn't have the benefit of aerial photography and Google Earth.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So then I got involved and I estimated there were at least 100,000 of these. And this was confirmed by some ex-heads of archaeology at the University of the Witwatersrand here in Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. And then I started counting them and I realized that I needed to actually find how many there were. And lo and behold, to my greatest surprise, after an extensive research on Google and some other aerial photography, I reached the conclusion and the count added to more than 10 million of these stone circles.
So that's primarily what was going on in that part of the world was gold mining, nothing else.
That's it. It was. But it's spectacular. When you look at the structures, it's not just independent stone circles all over the place. They're built in these large clusters of communities that
they look like subdivisions.
They're absolutely remarkable, and the more you look at them, the more you realize that there was a very specific purpose to this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And that's really what led me to the conclusions that I've reached about their knowledge of sound and frequency and using sound and sound frequencies as a source of energy.
Right.
And that is why everything was so clustered together and connected by these channels and thousands and thousands of square miles of agricultural terraces that holds all of this together.
And that is really well seen in your book, Temples of the African Gods and Adam's Calendar. I mean, those books show a lot of pictures of this.
Yeah, and look, I've been working on a follow-up to that. It won't be a picture book. It'll be a normal, you know, book with information with some pictures, but mostly information. Because we now know this points directly to the fact that we're dealing with the earliest gold mining settlements at the southern tip of Africa. There have been hundreds of thousands of gold mines that have been discovered and destroyed over the last 500 years. Many of them will never be found again because they're covered by soil from what I believe is the event that actually destroyed the civilization, and that was the so-called biblical flood,
right.
The event that all ancient cultures seem to share, and they all talk about it, and we now have the evidence in huge sedimentation, large areas of sedimentation that still cover majority of these stone circles and the channels and the terraces that connect them together, and only a very small percentage of these have been re-excavated and reused since the flood. So, so the fact that we've found this now, I believe, is what Zachariah Sitchin would have been incredibly excited to see before he died. The physical evidence of what he's been writing about for so many years.
Well, I was just absolutely blown away at the Truth Convention between what you presented as evidence of the using the Earth harmonics and frequencies to produce energy, and what David Wilcox presented at his Sunday meeting about using these same types of frequencies to actually move the large stones, which I guess would be applicable in Adam's calendar as well, because they had to get those stones from, you know, distant places to where they are today. Just about every miracle that we know of was explained scientifically. It was just a really amazing weekend.
Yeah. That's great. You know, it's I really connected with David at that convention, and because his research and my research really cross over on so many areas.
They do.
And we were able to share a lot of valuable information, and it's just fantastic. I'll be doing a joint presentation with David on my tour of the United States in Los Angeles in June this year, and I'm really looking forward to that. So.
Now, are you coming to Atlanta as well?
Yeah, we'll be in Atlanta. I'll tell you now what day we'll be in Atlanta. I'm doing two presentations in Atlanta on the 14th of May and on the 15th of May. On the 14th of May, I'm doing an evening presentation. And then on the 15th of May, the next day, I'm doing a workshop in Atlanta from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. A four-hour workshop. I'm really looking forward to that.
And when are you meeting with David again in L.A.? The day?
Los Angeles is the next month. That's in June. It's on the Wednesday, the 8th of June. It's at a very nice big venue downtown L.A. that we managed to find. And David's girlfriend Aurora and my girlfriend Daryl are actually putting it together, so it's in capable hands.
And you have a website where your schedule is located?
Yeah, we're going to start loading the schedule and start doing the PR and publicity actually on Monday or Tuesday. But it'll be on my websites, slavespecies.com and also zuluplanet.com. And we'll be updating people with some new information and just, you know, whetting their appetites to come to the presentation and learn more about the latest scientific research and discoveries. As I mentioned to you before, we've managed to do some astonishing measurements in these sites.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've come back from Atlanta, we've done even more measurements that are just absolutely spectacular. And they just defy any kind of logic and they show without any question of doubt that whoever was responsible for building these structures knew so much or infinitely more about frequency and energy and sound as a source of frequency. And we can really start learning if we just open our minds and absorb this knowledge. We can start learning very, very quickly and tapping into these sources of energy that are still giving us energy every second of every day.
And with pretty simple manipulations physically, we have the answer to our energy problems. I mean, the answers are the Earth itself and knowledge of the structures that you and David have come across. And then David went on to really expand how these frequencies can be used in medicine to fight cancer, to do organ regeneration, and just, you know, expanding it right into my field of study, which is, you know, medicine, surgery, and other fields of endeavor like that. And I think that the thing to take away from our conversation today is that we humans didn't invent anything. Everything that we learned from the gods, including medicine, surgery, mathematics, astronomy. Just study the Sumerian civilization, and you'll find out that there was no way that the humans developed any of these. These were given to us by the gods, just like gold was given to us by the gods. And look around, and you'll see what the gods gifted to us and what we did with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as part of the rise of consciousness, that's, as you obviously are aware of, is just going crazy everywhere.
I'm
starting to actually physically feel it. You know, we just had the megalithomania event here in Johannesburg this past weekend. And we had Graham Hancock and Robert Temple and Andrew Collins and Klaus Donner, just to name a few, that all came to Johannesburg, and we had an awesome event here. And it was just such an amazing experience to see South Africans come together in one venue that they don't always have the opportunity of doing, and just really planted what I believe a very strong seed for the rapid rise of consciousness in the southern tip of Africa. And it was just a phenomenal event, and I'm not quite sure why I raised that. My mind is all over the place.
That's fine. Well, Michael, you'll have to come back on. We're nearing the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time before we do announcements?
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks very much, Susan. Appreciate it. Lovely chatting to you. Just go to my website. So I've got two main websites. One is slavespecies.com, and the other one is zuluplanet.com. All the information for my upcoming USA and Canadian, I must add, will be in Vancouver and Montreal as well this time around. So USA and Canadian tour starting on the 6th of May 2011 in New York, and going through 26 cities in the USA and then the two Canadian cities over a two-month period.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. I really enjoyed reading Slave Species of God. It added a lot to my, interest and knowledge. It's a very, very complete work, and especially going into current science and tying it all to what Zechariah had brought forth from his study of the tablets. Next week, we have Dr. Greg Taft. We'll be talking about his book, Your Personal Life. Then on the 2nd, Donald Light, Dr. Donald Light, editor of Risk of Prescription Drugs. Then we have an interview with Dr. Stephen Greer on the 9th, his book, Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge. Dr. Greer is an ER physician who is the head of the Disclosure Project that I think Michael and I both met him at Truth Convention. On the 16th, we have Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman back to talk about 1111, the time prop phenomena. And Michael, if you've not looked at their book, you might want to look at it. It looks at the number 1111 similar to what you're looking at the number 22. And you might find some interesting information in that book.
And thank you very much.
I just started that last night, and it was a very fascinating book, and very much along the lines of what the research you're doing. And then we have Noetic Science, which is the third Thursday of every month in April. Lake Culver will be back. He is a remote viewer and a studier of extraterrestrial activity, and he will be speaking about extraterrestrial evidence that is current and ongoing. So that will be at the Dunwoody office. We hope to see you there the third Thursday of April. And Michael, I'd love to have you back on. We might be able to get you while you're here in the United States or Canada, if you're available. We don't have to do this on a Saturday. We can pre-record it, and we can finish up with, you know, the rest of your material. We didn't really get to the end of things because of the time constraints. But I do appreciate getting up. Is it very early there now in South Africa?
No, it's actually we started this at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, so it's
okay,
perfect
so
for
it's,
me.
It's not too bad to do it. It's not like Hawaii.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Michael. We've been speaking with Michael Tellinger, Slave Species of God, Adam's Calendar, and his upcoming tour in the United States and Canada will be on his website. It's Slave Species. Wait, would you give your website one more time?
Slavespecies.com and ZuluPlanet.com.
Okay, great. Well, thanks a lot, Michael. Hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Susan. Bye-bye.
Bye.